Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
From KQED.
Because, you know, you obviously you're steeped in that. You know that so well. So, yeah.
Steeped.
Steeped like a tea bag. This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, the process of creating new laws has been compared to making sausage. In other words, it's not pretty to watch. And the thing is, rarely can you watch because complicated negotiations on drafting legislation generally happen behind closed doors. Well, that process is getting some new scrutiny after a political ally of Governor Gavin Newsom, the owner of the Panera bread chain, appeared to benefit from an exemption in a new state law taking effect next month that will raise the hourly wages of fast food workers to $20 an hour. Finding out exactly how the exemption got into the legislation was complicated after it was revealed that a major labor union required negotiators working on the bill to sign a non-disclosure agreement, or NDA. Well, now a Republican lawmaker is trying to ban the use of NDAs in lawmaking, and we're going to look into that and many other aspects of how Sacramento works with a guy who spends an inordinate amount of time following the intricacies of state government. Chris McKelley is a registered lobbyist, former general counsel for the California Manufacturers Association. He's published hundreds of articles on tax and other fiscal policies, and he's written several books about it. His latest is a guide to California labor and employment law. Chris, welcome to Political Breakdown.
Thanks, Scott, for having me on your show. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, well, let me just begin by asking you about this law. You know, you analyze things that are happening at the state capitol with something I would say of with a fine-tooth comb. So let me ask you about this recent dust-up over this fast food law and the use of the non-disclosure agreements by some of those parties. And first of all, just walk us through the new law, which really was a priority of labor unions.
Yes, well, you actually have to go back to 2022 and Assembly Bill 257. It basically would have done most of what AB 1228, the bill from last year that took effect on January the 1st of this year, would do, including the creation of a fast food council to develop health and safety and employment regulations around the fast food industry. And of course, as you noted in your introduction, to increase the minimum wage from $16, which took effect on January 1st for all workers in the state of California, to $20 an hour just for fast food workers on April 1st of this year. And I hearken back to 2022 because that measure was subject to strong opposition from restaurants in the state, and particularly franchisees, those who operate a lot of the fast food establishments. And they took advantage of one of the three types of direct democracy mechanisms that we have in the state of California, which is the referendum. So an initiative, as you may be aware, allows voters to propose new laws, but a referendum requires the bill that was passed by the legislature and signed by the governor to be subject to a vote of the people. And it also stayed that law. So in 2023, last year, the legislature and governor wanted to bring the proponents and opponents of this fast food council measure to the bargaining table in light of the fact that the prior year's effort was going to be subject to a vote in November of 2024. And so they spent much of the summer months negotiating over that language, which ultimately became Assembly Bill 1228. And one of the requirements for that bill to take effect was to withdraw the referendum in November. And so that was done. And so now we have on the books Assembly Bill 1228.
And so tell us about the negotiations to get that into law. The reason this is in the news is that a couple of weeks ago, Bloomberg News published an article suggesting that Newsom, the governor, had pushed for a carve-out to benefit one of his political donors, Greg Flynn, who owns, you know, Panera Bread restaurants throughout the state. What is your take on that allegation?
Well, I'm not sure that there's any proof that the governor himself or the administration necessarily pushed for that. And I certainly wasn't a party to those negotiations, so have no firsthand knowledge. You know, there is a definition of national food fast food chain in the bill, a number of definitions, the Fast Food Council. And there is a carve out, as some have described it. It basically says that fast food restaurants are those that are a part of a national fast food chain. However, a fast food restaurant doesn't include someone who operates a bakery that produces for sale bread at the facility or on the premises of that establishment. And so as people try to figure out who or what might be a part of that exemption, obviously, as you indicated, Bloomberg News and others believe that only one type of entity, the Panera Bread franchise, would be subject to that exemption. However, as you may be aware, the governor's legal team indicates that they actually don't believe that Panera would benefit from the exemption. The other interesting aspect is last week, the gentleman who cited as the friend of the governor announced publicly that his franchise establishments would, in fact, be paying the $20 minimum wage. So that sort of moots the point whether his franchises do or do not benefit from that exemption. Clearly, he's not planning to take advantage of it because he's going to pay his employees $20 an hour as required by the bill.
Yeah, and none of this might come up if it hadn't been for that story about the NDAs, the non-disclosure agreements that people who were negotiating were asked to sign. You know, is this sort of a case of, you know, being shocked to learn that there's gambling in Casablanca? I mean, is there anything illegal or unethical or just bad government about using an NDA while you're negotiating legislation?
Well, I've been lobbying for more than 25 years and actually talked to a number of colleagues, and none of us had ever heard of the use of a non-disclosure agreement in legislative negotiations. I don't think that there is anything unlawful. In other words, there isn't a statute that prohibits it. As you might have seen, Assemblyman Vince Fong announced, I think Friday, that he's introducing a bill to, in fact, prohibit the use of NDAs in legislative negotiations. And so we may, in fact, see that it is unlawful by the end of the 2024 legislative session. But in the meantime, you know, you raise the ethics issue. So they may not, their use may not be unlawful. Unethical? I would say so. I don't see what the need is for them. And I don't think, in fact, that they have any place in legislative negotiations. As I've pointed out before, we generally work in an open and transparent legislative process. True, some aspects, not every gory detail of the sausage making, as you said, is visible to the public. Nonetheless, you know, we should do our utmost to ensure that legislative discussions and negotiations are open and transparent, and certainly the product that is done by those negotiations is available to the public.
All right. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, more with lobbyist Chris McKelly. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. Some want it all. SFO wants zero. Zero landfill waste, net carbon, and net energy by 2030. Learn more about the triple zero goal at flysfo.com.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We're talking with Chris McKelley. He's a registered lobbyist in Sacramento. He often testifies before legislative committees on fiscal policies. He's also written hundreds of columns about state government, and he's author of several books. His latest is A Guide to California Labor and Employment Law. Chris, just before the break, we were talking about these NDAs. SEIU, which is the biggest union in California, apparently they're the ones that insisted on the people at the table signing these NDAs, they say, because it enhances trust among the people in the room. But you don't see it that way?
I have not heard anything directly from them. So if that's the explanation, I accept it at its face value. The end product of legislative negotiations is the bill, ultimately a statute, right? I think with any type of legislative negotiation, whether it's simply between, you know, private parties and then they bring their work product to the legislature, or they're directed by the legislature, for example, to go, you know, figure something out, right? In other words, two warring sides, such as business and labor, are told, go see if you guys can figure something out. But once the legislative negotiations conclude, and again, their work product is put into a bill and is on the internet and available for all the public to see, as well as those, you know, who are going to consider it and vote on it, what transpired in those negotiations, I don't think should, by agreement, be kept secret. In other words, if legislators in a committee hearing wanted to ask about what transpired or what was discussed, perhaps what items were discussed that did not make their way into this bill, I think that that would be every right and responsibility of our elected legislators to do so. So that's where I'm troubled. In other words, I have no qualms with the expectation that negotiations as they take place be confidential. But once they conclude, I think no one should be precluded, especially legislators, from asking questions about how this work product, i.e. the piece of legislation, came about.
Yeah, and of course, anytime the bill is changed, that gets noted and is available as well. So there is transparency, yeah, as you said, once it becomes public. You know, I wonder, you know, Jerry Brown once famously said that not every human problem deserves a law. He was vetoing a bill that would have fined children and their parents for not wearing ski helmets. Do you agree with that general sentiment? Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there are, at least 1,000 new bills signed into law every year.
Yeah, just about at that number. Yes, Scott, I guess one of my favorite topics of discussion, for good or for bad, is the fact that I dislike the bill factory that the legislative branch of government has become. Yes, I would like to see both houses of the legislature reduce the number of bills. I don't think that there is adequate discussion going on in committees and on the floor concerning the bills that they are undertaking, because there are just too darn many of them. And I think an important role of the legislature is to examine how their prior laws are being interpreted, you know, funded, and being utilized by, say, the executive branch of government. That doesn't mean that investigations or oversight should have a negative connotation. It is part of the responsibility of the legislative branch, but they're just too darn busy, you know, considering the current crop of bills, to look at how their prior measures have been, you know, interpreted or being implemented.
Yeah, and that you could say, I mean, one of my pet peeves is that these ballot measures that get implemented that are sometimes very sweeping and very complicated, they get implemented, sure, and there's no real review to see how are they working sometimes or what the unintended consequences are. And I know in many states they have an automatic sunset clause so that after, you know, 5 years or whatever, the legislature gets to and analyze what impact it's had and maybe make some changes. But we just don't have that system here in California. People like their direct democracy the way it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an important check that we keep, and, you know, it could definitely use some improvement, but we can't do away with it. But direct democracy is not, a part of the bill factory nature of the legislature. And it's been an ongoing issue for many years. I mean, you said correctly, between 800 and 1100 new laws are being enacted each and every year. That includes, that's after the governor has vetoed anywhere from, 10 to 15% of the bills that get down to the governor's desk.
Yeah. Well, speaking of elections, we're almost a week past the March primary, and Proposition 1, the governor's bond measure to fund mental health and homeless housing, is still too close to call. There's something like 2 million ballots left to count, Chris. And I just, help us understand why it takes so long when these ballots can get fed into machines that, count the ballots automatically. Why does it take so long? I know some of them are provisional ballots that have to be checked, but they can't all be.
No, they're not. Don't forget that, after a specified, as long as your ballot is postmarked by the 5th, which in this case was last Tuesday, for several days thereafter, those ballots can come in, and many people, vote at the very last moment. I remember being in the swing space where the legislators and staff and many committees are today while they're, rebuilding the Capitol Annex. And a particular assembly chief of staff said, "Here's my ballot. I'm taking it over right now." This was about 2:30 in the afternoon on Tuesday the 5th. And I inquired why this person had taken so long. And their response was, "I want to see if any information comes out that might be applicable or appropriate for me to consider."
Yeah, I think
now,
that's fair.
For whatever reason you choose to wait until, election day to turn it in, there's nothing improper about doing so. But, many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, come in several days after the election, and it's entirely proper.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chris McKelly, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for all the work you do. It's a huge help to reporters tracking all these bills and veto messages and everything else. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
That is a wrap for Monday, March 11th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Muller. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.